Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Fired up to talk to our guy, Mr. Barry Sverluga, Washington Post columnist. You can follow him at Barry Sverluga, S-V-R-L-U-G-A. Barry, you and I sat together on Sunday and watched that game against the Eagles before we turn our eyes to the Atlanta Falcons. You watch a lot of sports, and you have a very wide prism for greatness, I'd say, between the Olympics and golf and baseball and everything you do. What are we seeing Jaden Daniels do this year?
Man, I think you and I were walking out in the parking lot, and you just kind of are like, I think we were walking separately, kind of both just shaking our heads, and then we're like, hey, dude, is that you? Oh, yeah. It's like the kid gives them a chance always. Like, anything is possible because they have him. And when you cast that against what we've talked about forever and ever and ever around here, which is they don't have the guy, it's such an amazing pivot, amazing 180 to realize that they do have the guy. Could he get hurt? He could get hurt. Like, I think there's still a little bit of the, like, you know, Robert Griffin III was ripping off seven straight wins to win the NFC East title in his rookie year of 2012. And I think there's a little bit of, like, tentativeness to, you know, maybe embrace this wholeheartedly. But if you remove that kind of history, you just got to think that, holy cow, they've got a combination of a player with amazing physical tools who clearly puts in the work to prepare, and then mix in the intangible of not only is no moment too big, but he actually embraces those big moments and says casually afterwards, like, yeah, if you love the sport, like that's where you want to be. It's just an intoxicating combination that makes the entire franchise and frankly the whole sports town feel different.
How do you feel like that has grown as the year has gone on? As his teammates fall, like they trust this guy more and more as the season's gone on. I mean, going back to training camp, people were talking about how much they trusted him, but they, you know, you haven't seen him on the field yet. It seems like week after week there are moments added to this legendary rookie season. How have you seen that evolve as the season's gone on with his teammates?
Well, I think some of it is, you know, there's been attrition, right, in terms of, you know, Noah Brown's not there. They lost Ertz in the New Orleans game for the rest of that game. Eckler hasn't played for a while and can't play until the Dallas game with that concussion. And I think we all would have said going,
not a win.
Yeah, right. I mean,
sorry.
I think we all would have said in training camp, like, oh, they're probably a few weapons short of being able to be a 30-point a game offense. And I think what you've learned about Daniels is that he can turn people into weapons because he's that good, and defenses have to, you know, they have to be aware of the run. I mean, because the game ended how it did and dramatic, 6 seconds left touchdown to Crowder, maybe you lose sight of the 29-yard run on 4th and 11. Like, that's just game-changing stuff. So he is a weapon in two different ways on his own, because he can throw and he can run. But you're talking about a game in which Jamison Crowder and OZ had two touchdown catches apiece. Like, right. No one had that on their bingo card at the beginning of the season, that those two guys would combine for 4 TDs in a single game against a divisional opponent that you pull out at the last minute. He's the kind of great player that elevates the play of others, which is another, put that in the laundry list of accolades or attributes that he has that make him just really, really special.
Talking with our friend Barry Svrluga here from the Washington Post. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Barry Svrluga. Barry, I think you're so right, and I really enjoyed your column. I just retweeted if anybody missed it after the game Sunday night. Dan Quinn's talked about all week, we want to be heavy hitters. We want to prove we belong. And after the game, DQ said of Jaden today, he became a heavy hitter. What he was able to do just felt, even as much as the Hail Mary created this high, right? Like this level of elation, the win over Philly was different because it was like a drive. There's a big component of flukiness to a Hail Mary. There was nothing fluky, especially for a kid, a young man, just turned 24, to throw a pick with 3 minutes left and then to come back with a minute and go down the field. The guts and kind of you – he's only a rookie, I understand that, but you start to build this level of gravitas as a quarterback when, we're sitting and we're watching and it's like, oh, man, all right, Josh Allen's got the ball, a minute and a half left. Like, can he prove he's the guy? And Mahomes, obviously, and maybe Herbert. And Jaden is in that conversation now where it's like, oh, dude, this guy can do it. And when you have that guy on your team, the whole team feels that. Didn't you think that, Barry, in that locker room after that game?
Oh, for sure. And also, I think you get into the conversation of, like, he's now one of the guys where you say, oh, no, you left him too much time. Like, they're getting the ball at their 30, and he's got two timeouts, say. And I think they should have had 3 timeouts going into that drive, but that's nitpicking at this point. But, you know those guys, and you mentioned, like, Mahomes is probably chief amongst them now, that you're like, oh, he's got 90 seconds, 3 timeouts, and 70 yards to go. Like, the only question is, which way is he going to score? And I'm not saying that Daniels has reached Mahomes' level at all, but I definitely think if you're a fan of the opposing team, you have that thought sitting in your seat or sitting on the couch thinking, oh, man, we left him too much time. We took the lead, and we needed to take the lead, but he's got, 2 minutes and change. That's a lot, because he can orchestrate and create a lot of things with both his physical attributes, like we talked about, but also his managing the situations and understanding the situations. And this, think about this, JP, like, cast their situational football this year against what it's been over the previous 4 years, and just how they manage everything. And you're just, am I quibbling that they shouldn't have taken a timeout to ice the kicker?
Yeah, there's quibbles. Right.
You can do that, sure. Like, I would have rather had that timeout to use for Jaden to have an extra play to stop the clock. But managing it all is so much more normal and feels like a net positive. I mean, go back to the New Orleans game. Like, should they have kicked that 54-yard field goal? Like, at least Dan Quinn had a rock solid, this is the logic behind what I was prepared for that moment, because I knew from the 38 in we were kicking and from the 39 out we weren't. We can argue that, but it was thought through, and I think that's what this whole outfit feels, thought through and prepared. And they're not going to lose They could lose because of a lack of execution. They could lose because the other team is better. The Dallas game was obviously kind of a disaster from all points, but they're not going to mismanage their way into a loss, and that's from head coach and that's from quarterback, which is such a pivot from the last 4 years.
It was well documented what kind of guy he was coming out of LSU, what kind of player he was, but I think he's exceeded expectations. I mean, sets the record for most rookies of the week. He's likely going to win rookie of the year, all that stuff. What surprised you most about him as the season's gone on, or has it just been kind of like a culmination of, like, this is the guy that they expected to get when they drafted him, and he's been everything that they've expected him to be and more?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, like, you know, when you draft Chase Young number two, you think, okay, he's what we expected him to be, and
think you're getting
maybe not more, but, well, right, yes, exactly. But so you can, the talk in minicamp and training camp about, oh, this is who we expected and he's special as a person, like, it doesn't matter until it happens. So, and now it's happened and it's happening. And that makes all the, you know, kudos about his character and his preparation and stuff seem very real. But I think the thing that, I don't know if stuns is the right word, but, you know, kind of I'm pleasantly surprised by is the matter of factness that he takes all this in. Like he expected to take that ball and go down the field and win that game the other day. And then afterwards, you know, all he talks about is, I love winning, so this feels good. But it's not in a, he's in no way overwhelmed by any of it, not by the situation that's presented him right in front of him, but, and also not by the aftermath. And I think some of that is because, like, you can see Terry McLaurin's, like, absolute joy, like joy because he's having a career season, but and joy because he knows who his quarterback is going to be, which he's never known from year to year or week to week. But he also has been through all the crap around here for the first 5 years of his career. And so he, like the fan base, realizes what a pivot this is. He didn't catch the game-winning touchdown. I mean, he had a touchdown catch that was an amazing, amazing catch, Willie Mays style. But you can just feel and sense his kind of joy for, you know, how much stuff has changed, what winning feels like, what marked. They've never been ahead of a season like this. Yeah, I know they haven't clinched a playoff berth, but they have been pointed toward the playoffs and in playoff position for most of the season. The whole year, right, exactly.
Right.
Which is just completely, completely different than it's been before. And Terry, like, standing there and saying, man, we got the guy, is kind of, that's like in lockstep with the fan base of, like, we're unwrapping this present and it's exactly what we wanted. It's just an amazing feeling.
It really is. Talking with our friend Barry Sferluga from the Washington Post. You can read his columns, WashingtonPost.com. Check out his work at Barry Sferluga. It's fascinating now, the storylines you get with Atlanta coming back. And I think because Jaden has been so impressive, and I think because, just kind of as an NFL collective audience, whether, you know, you kind of work around it or you just watch it and enjoy it as a fan, we're so preconditioned to care most about offense and the play design and the play caller and the quarterback that maybe we don't really think about the defense as much. I think that's just like a natural state. Like, everybody plays fantasy football. It's just different. And I think we're in this weird spot with Dan Quinn, where he's been really good. And to your earlier point about the kick in New Orleans, I supported it because it is consistent with how they've coached and attacked. And I think DQ was like, no, we knew exactly from that yard marker we were going. And it was something we determined before the game. Even when they mess up, like when DQ went for it 4th-and-2 in Philly on the Thursday nighter, like I can come up with, like you were saying earlier, some quibbles. We can pick some nits. I think they had some flaws both in the 2 minute before halftime and in the last minute with last week. But all of that said, like we're kind of finding flaws in what has been a really, really strong body of work for Dan Quinn. And, dude, he wasn't probably the top pick for most fans when he got the job last year. And what he has built from an environment, like an ecosystem of football out here, everybody is all the way buying in. And I understand that, like, our job in the media is somewhat to be skeptical and to ask a lot of questions. But unless you're in it, you can't really feel how much all of the stuff is working. And Jaden's a huge component of that, right? But then think about this. This is a completely forgotten storyline because of Jaden and the playoffs and whatever else. DQ gets another shot at Atlanta, where everybody knows how painful that Super Bowl loss must have been. And then eventually, I think it was 2 years later, he gets fired in season. He'll probably poo-poo it, not really talk about it. It's got to mean something, Barry.
It's got to. And I also think, you know, you're right. Like, I definitely was not they should hire Dan Quinn person. I was very, very, very much on the Ben Johnson specifically and offensive guy in general, because you lock the head coach with the quarterback and you put him as one, and you don't get into a Chicago Bears situation where now you have the quarterback, but you fire the coordinator, then you fire the coach, and you're completely out of step, and that can mess with the kid's career. And then, you know, the flip side of if you do hire a defensive coach, and we're going to deal with this question coming up, if the quarterback develops under an offensive coordinator, does the offensive coordinator get a look elsewhere as a head coach? We're going to probably have to be reporting on that with Cliff Kingsbury this offseason. But what impressed me about Quinn when he got here was his willingness to admit and embrace that, look, I got fired in Atlanta for a reason, and it's not my job now to complain about what the circumstances were and what the health of the team was and why did we get off to a bad start, why did we collapse in the Super Bowl. I'm not going to complain about those circumstances. I'm going to look back on them and scrutinize them and go into my next job not trying to recreate my last job, but to be better. And not to pick on Ron Rivera, who's very, very easy to pick on. But I think because he got fired in the middle of the season in Carolina and immediately was, like, essentially being interviewed by Dan Snyder and being told, I want a coach-centric model. You happen to be available. I'm going to give you the keys to everything. He never had that either ability to or didn't make the choice to go back and review what went wrong in Carolina and really just hung, you know, everything on the laurels, the good things that he did there. Yeah, we went to the Super Bowl when Cam Newton was playing at an MVP level and we went 15-1. There wasn't the same kind of scrutiny on his own flaws. And I think Quinn, to his credit, took what he did in Atlanta, went and became a defensive coordinator, grew in his coaching there, and arrived here in, you know, prepared to fix the things that were his downfall in a really admirable way. And then lastly, I'd say, JP, when you're talking about creating the environment that they have out there, Adam Peters and Quinn talked in the offseason about, you know, we want to find people who are commanders, who are commander-type players,
yeah.
Which sounds weird because the name is so new and there's no tradition attached to it. And it felt like, to me, kind of jargon. And I think a lot of what Quinn says feels like slogany, jargony stuff. But I'm, you know, whatever it is, 15 games in now, I think that was not just talk. That was the people that they brought in were and are the right type of people, and that's helped create. And you know, again, go back to what McLaurin was saying on Sunday. Like, there's one vision here. There's one from the top down. Everybody in lockstep. Obviously, some of that is because they're winning, and it's, as anybody would admit, it's a lot easier to follow the lead when things are going right. But I do think there's something to the type of person that Peters brought in, both from a fitting into their play style, but also fitting into the locker room, that matters a lot in giving you the feeling that everybody's bought in the right way.
Real quick, Barry, I know we don't have much longer here, but looking at what's happened this season, where it's you really have Josh Harris being able to put his fingerprint on the organization. You bring in Adam Peters, you bring in Dan Quinn, just like you were talking about. It seems like you figured out the quarterback. Now you have the RFK site. How important has this season and this year been to bring back this fan base?
You know, it's really hard to quantify, I think, because I do. Is there more excitement? Is there more optimism? Of course there is. But I think it's very, very hard to have a single season, even with as much transformation as you've described, immediately allow everybody who was dragged through the mud and has so much scar tissue from the previous 24, 25 years to just be like, I'm all in. And that's all in financially and all in emotionally and all in with giving my time. I think obviously the franchise is in just a 1,000,000% better situation than it was two calendar years ago. But I think it would be dismissive of all the damage that was done to the fan base and how much the erosion was very, very real under Snyder to say that, you know, Harris and Peters and Quinn and Daniels have just solved all those problems in 15 games. I think we have recency bias and everything is moving in a positive direction. But that was real, real damage done over a long, long period of time. And to say that it was back to what it was, which, you know, at one point there really was a wait list for season tickets. There's not a wait list for season tickets now. Like it can get to what it was. But I think we're jumping the gun to saying like, oh, the erosion from the Snyder era has been fully built back up. It's going to take obviously more success, but I think it's going to take time too.
Sure,
Barold, we appreciate you, brother. Merry Christmas! Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Barry.
Merry Christmas, guys. See you on Sunday.
All right, that's our guy, Barry Svrluga, at Barry Svrluga, S-V-R-L-U-G-A. Interesting question there from Tobo. How far back is this thing? Plus, you're going to hear from Joe Witt Jr. at 11:45. All right, this thing's getting out now. Big thank you to our friend Barry Svrluga for joining us. If you missed any of that, Barry's just, it's funny. Toby and I were sitting here saying how good Barry is during the break, which is a testament to how good Barry is and just what dorks Toby and I are. But this thing's getting legs. I've tried to... I'm reaching out to the actual reporter that wrote the story rather than just all these nerd aggregators. But for now, we're going to go with the nerds. Jeff McClain of the Philadelphia Inquirer reported that Nick Sirianni and Zach Ertz got into it following Sunday's game. Apparently, Sirianni reached out to apologize to Ertz to clear things up. And had to be separated by Big Dom, Dominic DeSandro, the Eagles' chief security officer. I've gotten to know Ertz a little bit throughout the season. He plays at a really, really fiery, competitive level. And obviously beating Philly is going to matter to him. But for Sirianni to, apparently, from my understanding, is go after Ertz, after a game like that, is just such lowbrow dork behavior from a guy that clearly has repeatedly shown he runs too hot to be an NFL head coach. Yes. Like you just cannot keep doing this stuff. And occasionally if there's one-off things here and there over a significant body of time, like, okay, he runs hot, but he controls himself. This dude isn't in control, and it sure, we had, I believe it was Derek Gunn come on earlier this year, talk about what's going on in Philly, and he said, Big Dom's the one that actually runs everything. It sure seems like it. Big Dom might not be calling the plays, but it seems like that ship would sink if he wasn't there.
It's just so pathetic, right? I mean, Nick Sirianni, like, it feels like this year, and maybe it is Big Dom being back on the sideline that makes the difference, you know, they had the chance – a couple weeks ago to implode with the Brandon Graham saying stuff and then Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown and the drama there. And to their credit, they seem to be able to right the ship. But why does there always seem to be drama around such a good football team, right? Like, you notice something about the really, really good teams. Like, you think back to New England, there wasn't drama around the team. It was maybe outside drama that was created about stuff, but it wasn't stuff from inside the building that got brought. I mean, they had some.
Deflategate, Aaron Hernandez, Spygate. But they had some drama, dude.
But I'm saying, like, they
sound like Robert Kraft trying to whitewash all that, make it all Belichick's fault.
They did stuff. There's no doubt about it. But they didn't cause this, right? Like, they did the stuff, but the stuff on the outside, like, there wasn't internal issues.
I think what you want to say that you're not saying is that on Sundays from 1 to 4 o'clock or 4 to 7, whenever they were playing, no matter what was going on, it never made it to the field, ever. And with the Eagles, it seems like this stuff makes it to
constantly,
the field.
Constantly. It feels like, and Sirianni's doing this, and the players are doing this, and it's just nonstop. I don't quite understand. I mean, credit to them because they're playing some good football, but what the heck, dude? Like, I don't get how Sirianni... This dude should have lost his job very possibly a year after going to the Super Bowl because of how much of an idiot he is, and he clearly hasn't learned from that. What? Why are you talking about another player on another team, especially a guy like Zach Ertz, saying anything negative about a guy that's a franchise legend?
And, dude, I know this firsthand. The Ertz Foundation is still putting a lot of time, effort, money into the city of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Like, because his life has moved on... His playing career, like, I believe they still live in the Philly area. Like, it's just, I know he did the coat drive here for Thanksgiving, but he also is still doing it in Philly. Like, it just shows a dude that's out of control, that just doesn't control his emotions. And it seems like without Big Dom there, the whole ship might be a sinking. You know what I mean?
It's crazy that your security guard or whatever he is, personal protector, who's the guy that does that for this team? Do we know? Like, the fact that I know
who their security guys are, but they don't have one on the sideline
exactly.
That has to stand next to the coach
exactly.
Because he's a hothead.
The whole reason that Big Dom, the reason that we know this dude is a joke, right? And the fact that now we're talking about him being the reason this thing stays afloat is even more ridiculous.
Yeah, totally. It's just... remarkable, and Philly, odds are, is going to win the division. You know, I'm not. They just amassed so much talent up there, but they clearly don't handle the losses well. Who do the Eagles have this week? Giants?
Yeah, I think they got. Yeah, they got the easy schedule.
No, Cowboys. Cowboys in Philly Sunday at 1 o'clock. That Cowboys game team is no longer a gimme, man.
Cowboys then Giants for them. So
honestly, Dallas may have reestablished their footing. When they won here,
well,
that's kind of when they got things turned around a bit with Cooper Rush.
The interesting part, are they playing well enough that Mike McCarthy keeps his job now? Without Dak Prescott, this team, they've kind of turned a corner a little bit. You keep him around?
Dude, I don't think they will. They're 7-8 right now. They could still finish with a winning record.
It's wild.
They could still get to 9-8. I mean, literally, they turned their season around by beating Washington here. They had lost 5 in a row.
Yeah.
And then they showed up and beat Washington.
And by the way,
they were 3-7, and since then they've won 4 or 5. Their only loss was to the Bengals, and it was relatively tight.
If that doesn't add a little more intrigue for Sunday, win against the Falcons so you don't have to go to Dallas and win in Week 18.
Dude.
Could you imagine the motivation they would have to end the season here?
Yeah.
So please win against Atlanta so we don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, that'd be a tough week, going the opposite way. But whatever, it's all eyes. All eyes on Atlanta. That's how we're operating, and that's how you should operate. When we return, you should hear from Commanders defense coordinator Joe Witt. Then we got Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports at noon. Cliff Kingsbury talking at 12:30. Nobody go anywhere. We're busy.
Welcome back. It is B. Mitch in Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer in with JP today as B. Mitch enjoys another day off. I don't know if you guys have seen this yet, but good news for fans of the Commanders that are going to the game on Sunday. They take the Metro. They're teaming up to provide extended service, so you'll be able to get home Sunday after the game. So good move for the Commanders and Metro there. We're going to hear from Joe Witt Jr. in just a couple of minutes here, the defensive coordinator for the Commanders. They're going to have a tough task. I mean, it's tough when you're going up against a quarterback like Michael Penix, because you just don't have much on him. You know, you can go back to some of the college tape, and I'm intrigued to see how they're going to use him. Last week, you know, they didn't have to do much with him. You're playing a Giants team that's kind of given up. They end up winning 34-7. Penix, 18-27, 202 yards, no touchdowns, the one pick. The pick coming on a really, really bad play by Kyle Pitts. But, you know, you're going to have your hands full. They've got a good rushing attack with Bijan Robinson, one of the best running backs in the league. Now, I think coming off of the Philly game, you at least have something where, you know, if you can take a lot of what you did against Philadelphia in terms of being able to contain Saquon from quarters 2, 3, and 4 and apply that to Atlanta, you know, Bijan's good. He's not Saquon. Saquon's kind of one of one. So if you can at least, what you did in those second, third, and fourth quarters to slow down Saquon, if you can bring some of that over to slow down Bijan Robinson, you feel good about there. But I'm really intrigued about the health of Marshon Lattimore, because to me that's going to change how this defense is able to go out there and play. You know, like I talked about earlier, when you look at how they play defense with Marshon Lattimore on the field, they kind of just let him follow that best guy around. For the Falcons, that's going to be Drake London. You know, when you let him just kind of travel around and follow London, and they've got some solid receivers around him. Darnell Mooney's fine. Ray-Ray McLeod's all right. But, you know, their really big number one target's going to be Drake London. Kyle Pitts, I think at this point in his career, with what we've seen of him, he's more of a household name because of where he was drafted than he is an actual on-field production guy. Like, it, as crazy as that sounds for a guy that was drafted, I think, higher than any tight end ever, and someone that's a freak, 6'6", 246, can run like the wind. Doesn't really matter, though, because he doesn't make much of an impact on the field. Last week, he gets thrown the ball in the red zone and coughs it up right into the defender's hands. So it's something where this week, I think, they can probably get by without Lattimore, but it'd be nice to have Lattimore out on the field, because it really allows them to, last week against Philadelphia, you just kind of have Lattimore, his one responsibility is A.J. Brown. He doesn't have to worry about everything else, and the rest, frankly, the rest of the defense doesn't have to worry about anything else more so than Lattimore, right? Like, Lattimore is going to be on A.J. Brown. He's going to follow him around. And, yes, A.J. Brown had some plays. Yes, he had the pass interferences get called, and look, some of those we know were not very good calls. But I think, more importantly, you see, like, Devontae Smith was 6 of 51. They only had three dudes. How have I not read this yet? They only had three dudes catch passes last week. A.J. Brown was 8 for 97 with a touchdown. Devontae Smith was 6 for 51, and Kenneth Gainwell caught 1 for 6. They only had three dudes catch passes last week. So when you have Lattimore on the field and you're able to put him on A.J. Brown and just kind of let him follow Brown around and let him do his thing, it allows the rest of the defense to get in a rhythm, and you kind of kept Devontae Smith in check. I know he had the drop. I know that, you know, that hits him in the hands. He makes that catch 99 times out of 100, and Washington catches a break there. But I think allowing the rest of the defense to function while he takes the top option is really important to what they're trying to do. It allows them to play a little more aggressive. You can blitz a little bit more. You can do some things. You don't have to roll the coverage over on top of Lattimore. You can roll that over to help out whoever, you know, Sanders still or Igbinoghene is guarding on the other side of the field. So there's so many different ways that you can do it. And I think having a guy like Lattimore out there is so important. And you know, to the point of a lot of people were talking when he hadn't been able to get out on the field yet. And they're talking about how, look, you trade for this guy, it's not something, you know, it's a long-term play with some of the short-term look of it. But the reality is, you don't trade for a dude in Lattimore in the middle of the season for him not to play down the stretch here. If you needed something for the next couple of years, you sign someone in free agency or you make a trade in the offseason. That's not something you do in the middle of the year thinking, yes, long-term plays into it, but you traded for this guy because of where you were in your position and needing help immediately. The fact that now, once again, we're having to deal with whether he's going to be on the field or not, I think we're going to get more of an update today. It's something that, you know, we're going to have to monitor, because yesterday they didn't practice. So listing him as a DNP and some of the guys that they listed as DNPs yesterday, frankly, I don't buy too much and don't really care too much. I'm interested to see what they have him listed as today. Is he able to at least get out there in limited fashion? You'd love to see him out there in full, but I mean, like JP said earlier, when you get one of these speed guys, one of these guys on the outside, a skill position guy dealing with a hamstring injury, sometimes those things linger. And I mean, this is something where when they traded for him, you thought for a fact he'd get on the field before the bye at least. And that wasn't even the case. And now you're dealing with it once again. and you're going to be right back in the same spot. And the other thing, too, is you've kind of seen the answer as to what they're going to do, and that is sending Benjamin St. Juice to the bench. He has not played nearly the amount of snaps that he had earlier in the season when he was basically their number one corner. Now you're going to have to throw Benjamin St. Juice back out there, and you know at least they have familiarity of what that looks like because they played most of the season that way. But seeing the glimpse the last 2 weeks of what it looks like having Lattimore on the field, it's been nice. It's been nice to see a legit shutdown corner out on the field, and you see the vision as to what Adam Peters is trying to do. You see why going out and getting a Lattimore makes a lot of sense. And look, I don't think the compensation was too crazy, regardless of what they had to give up. Like, getting a guy like that for the price tag, for the amount of picks you had to give up, I'll do that 10 times out of 10. The problem is, if he's not going to be on the field, it's never going to be worth it. So, curious to see if he's able to get out on the practice field today. Also, want to take a look at Frankie Luvu and what he's been able to do defensively this year has been spectacular. With his ability to go and be versatile, it's been fun to watch. It's been really fun to watch with what he's been able to do. And I think where you have a guy like Bobby Wagner, you know, when he was signed, remember, people were talking about him being the Mike, right? And that was just never going to be the case. It was never going to be the case that he was the Mike linebacker. It was going to be the case that he was going to be used as that chess piece. And I think a lot of people looked at this offseason and looking ahead to next offseason thinking, well, maybe Micah Parsons can make a he can come to Washington and he can fit into the Dan Quinn. Honestly, the way they're using Luvu is kind of Micah Parsons-esque. And so maybe they don't need to go after someone like that when you've got someone on a much cheaper price tag playing at a really, really high level. So I think it's really intriguing when you see how they've built this defense. And like I've talked about before, the thing that I like about where they're at, and you think about this on the offensive side, you think about it on the defensive side too, frankly, with a rookie quarterback, a guy on a rookie deal, and a lot of cap space, this is when you can really build something. With some of those picks, with some of that money, this is when you can really build something. So I think this is a real opportunity this offseason to improve this defense even more. You've already got Lattimore in the fold. You've got guys like Luvu. I think you try to bring back a Chin and a Wagner, and you can really improve this thing, and it's already starting to play better. But I'd like to see them finish this season strong. I'd love to see them come out against Atlanta and really show strongly, because they're going to need them. They're going to need them down the stretch, and they need to get in shape for the postseason, because you're going to play a really good team. It might be Philly again. All likelihood, you're going to face Philly again, and that first quarter was not great, so they're going to have to get things figured out. Let's take a break. When we come back, Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports, he's going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on yesterday's games, which were not great. Get some of his thoughts on that. Also, get his thoughts on this weekend's game as the Commanders get set for the Falcons on Sunday Night Football. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley on The Fan.